I am using a program, the unfortunately named Hindenburg, to record.
Nice.
And I will get you a .wav file.
That program was way popular before the disaster in 1939. So
they really,
we're not changing the name.
Yeah, they did not want to change the name.
Everybody knows it as this.
Bob, we got to do something.
My
dad, we're not a blimp.
My dad, Jonathan Hindenburg, started this recording software company.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Co-Pilots. I am Sean Conroy.
And I'm Andy Secunda.
On this podcast, we talk about TV pilots, the first episodes of television shows. Sometimes pilots become long-running series. Others don't make it past that first episode.
We're going to talk about all of them. The great pilots, the bad pilots, the weird pilots, the forgotten pilots. We are TV writers, but it should be noted that we are the dumbest TV writers you know. So all these are just our dumb opinions.
So dumb.
Jordan Morris, podcaster extraordinaire, comedy writer, performer. What are your other list of just amazing accomplishments? Friend of mine in a dinner group, a recurring dinner group that somehow formed
on one of Andy's text chains. Sean and I are not on any text chains together, but maybe that'll change.
We do have a dinner duo though. We go to the Ivy once a week.
I think that's just a date, guys.
Right. Yeah, we call it a dinner duo.
Yeah, we call it a dinner duo. And we don't have a text chain, but we are pen pals. So I'll send Sean a postcard from wherever I go. And
I always write in lavender ink.
Stick some little stickers in the envelope. I always appreciate that. That's fun.
So question really number one. Because I think Alf is a great choice. Alf is the show we'll be talking about today. But you're a man of many different interests, and many of them
actually just
geeky.
Alf, Andy.
that answers more of my question, which is why Alf. And it's like, well, that's the you have that on your collectibles.
We've been trying
on your shelves,
to get him for a bunch of other
walls.
Things, and he just wouldn't do it. You know?
Not interested in Battlestar Galactica. Not interested in The Sopranos.
I do, now that I remember, every time I have brought up Battlestar Galactica, you have related back to Alf in some way, and I've always found that odd. So why Alf is really what I'm winding my way down to. What strikes you? Because we like to, you know, we will force a pilot on a guest, but we like to see if there's something that they cotton to.
Yeah, I was Alf crazy as a kid. We like VCR taped them every week so we could, you know, rewatch them through the week. We had a pretty big VHS collection of Alf episodes. My childhood cat's name was Lucky, after the Tanner family cat.
There
Lucky.
You go. Yeah.
Our cat was also a black cat, so it kind of had a double, you know, another little meaning, kind of an ironic, twist, but
very clever.
Our
family black cat was named Salem, so that was
that's cute.
It was sort of a gimme. It was like, well, yeah, that would be what you call it. So Lucky's much more clever.
Another famous TV cat, the one that belongs to Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
That's right. Post when we had Salem.
Oh, yeah.
You think she named
I
her
think
cat
she
after
copied
yours?
It. Yes, yeah. I think that she. Ironically.
What do we name this cat? It's a witch's cat. What do we name it?
So anyway, I interrupted your flow.
No, that's okay. It was a cherished part of my childhood, and one of those things that kind of just like became a punchline, a cultural punchline. You know, if you need a joke about like an 80s sitcom or, you know, a dumb TV show from the past, like Alf's always a good pull. And it didn't do that thing like The Simpsons or The Seinfeld where it like hung around in reruns. Like Alf kind of just disappeared after it went off the air. I mean, I'm sure it's rerunning somewhere. I think it's on like MeTV or something like that. But like Alf didn't age like some of those other shows. And I know there's been a couple of like attempted Alf comebacks. I think he had a talk show on like IFC for a hot second.
He did, which I kept looking into it and like being like, wait, it couldn't have actually had Ed McMahon on it at that point, because it was like 2004, but it did. And he was still cognizant and, you know, exactly the Ed McMahon you've always remembered. It was pretty shocking.
Yeah. So, you know, Alf was still in my brain, but it occurred to me that I didn't remember much about the actual show. Like, I kind of remembered who the family was, and I remembered no problem because, you know, that's one of the great catchphrases. I think we can all agree. But I didn't remember too much else about the actual show.
He didn't invent the phraseology, no problem, though. He maybe popularized it in a certain delivery.
That was like his thing. He says no problem a lot. It was on the T-shirts.
People had problems before that, but nobody thought to put together, like, is that a problem for you? And people would go, I guess we'll see.
It's not a problem.
Yeah.
And Alf is like, let's
It's possible it's a problem, but he was just a definitive no problem. And people
only
like,
one
hey,
way
that's...
to find out.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I thought this would just be a fun excuse to, like, go back and actually see what Alf was all about.
Well, then this will be really interesting to hear what all of our takes are, because I will say that my experience of Alf was the way you described it, that it was just like, that's, you know, a joke. That's a punchline.
Sure.
That's not a good show. That's a hacky show. It's at best just for kids, but I think they're trying to do a show for everyone. And kind of particularly as on a podcast that covers pilots, we run the gamut of things where it's like it could turn into a fantastic show later and it might be a horrible pilot because they haven't figured out the rhythms of any of the characters or they haven't figured out the dynamics or the, you know, the internal like story engine. And it's to me, it's shocking how much the show is just there and ready to go and pretty perfect for what it is, for like the intention of what Alf is to me is there in the first episode. So I will be curious to hear what you guys think. I do have one question right off the top, which is, do you feel like the pilot is indicative from your memory of what the show became?
Sure. Cards on the table. I thought the pilot fucking sucked.
Oh, and this is fascinating.
I thought it was not funny.
No problem.
Listen, did I laugh when he said no problem? Yeah, I did. And there's a couple other funny things.
This must have been very difficult for a person whose entire reference point is Alf in every situation.
I burned all my T-shirts. I'm going to have to find a new character to go as when I go to furry conventions. You know, that Alf suit cost me a couple thou. Especially to get the erection installed, but, you know.
It's really a lot of money.
Yeah, I really sunk a lot of money into that Alf costume, but the pilot's just too bad. No, you know,
Is it still no problem when you're in the act of intercourse in that outfit, or is it just, is it more like, you know, I kill me, like, or do you vary it up?
Like, do I yell different Alf catchphrases when I make
you
love in the Alf
to,
outfit?
Right? You're in an Alf outfit. Yeah. Like, it'd be very disappointing if you didn't yell at least one.
Right. And, you know, and there's a fun eating cats, eating pussy entendre you can do. Like, I normally eat cats, but now I'm going to munch on a little, you know. You can kind of tell where that goes.
No problem.
Yeah. So, you know, my sexuality has been upended by this revelation that the Alf pilot is bad. I absolutely see from watching this pilot why this became shorthand for like 80s hack sitcom.
Right.
Because it is just like the most generic sitcom family.
Uh huh. Certainly no argument. Yeah.
They just added an alien. And like the world building of it is so fucking lazy. Uh-huh. It is just like, we have this puppet and we have this guy who does a funny voice and the voice is funny and the puppet is funny, but like they've just done jack shit other than throw him into a generic sitcom family and then like snorted some blow and went over to, I don't know, where are you going after you snort some blow in your Hollywood writing room in the 80s? The Ivy. Probably.
The Ivy. Yeah, sure. They actually shot it in Culver City, I realized. Ooh. Not at what's now Sony, but somewhere nearby. So
Father's office.
Maybe,
Father's
maybe office. One of the places that all the people that I worked with frequented, you know, after doing a bunch of blow.
Backstage Bar and Grill, maybe?
Could have been.
Karaoke night at the Backstage Bar and Grill. If you're ganked out of your mind on blow and had invented Carol Burnett, that's where you want to go.
I feel like we really missed the good blow years, guys.
Boy, we sure did. Boy, we sure did.
It was never once did anyone ever offer me blow in a room.
Yeah.
So I'm going to lay all my cards on the table Sean, what did and disagree you with both of you and split the difference.
So you didn't watch it.
I think Andy made some good points. I think Jordan made some good points. So I'm done. No,
I don't know if falling in the middle is a hard disagree with both of us, Sean.
Yes. I thought the pilot did what a pilot is supposed to do in terms of establishing who these people are and what the fun of the show is going to be. I just didn't like it because I thought a lot of the stuff was not funny, but I understand that that is sometimes just a matter of taste. You know, there are people who I'm sure ate this shit up with a spoon, which is why it stayed on for as long as it did.
I mean, young Jordan and the Morris family, we were shit slurpers back then. We were just snacking on spoonfuls of the Alf shit. We were watching every week. We were taping the damn thing. But I wonder if I was to text my mom now, did you like Alf? I wonder if she actually was enjoying it or if she was just like, my kids love this.
Sure.
I'll tolerate Alf for, you know, 30 minutes a week. But
I mean, what was their taste? What were the Morris's tastes? Were they people who would have sat down and watched kind of a dumb sitcom, or would they have been like, we
sure watched a lot of them. We watched a lot of like Full House. The TGIF lineup was big for my family. But again, I don't know how much Gail and Thad were actually enjoying those, or if it was just like, at the time, these were the equivalent of like a racist idiot playing Minecraft now, you know, it's just like, that's just what kids watch.
Right.
So,
but they would sit and watch with you.
Yeah, for the most, my mom would. She definitely would. But I think the stuff they would turn on would be like Jeopardy and Wheel, big Jeopardy and Wheelhouse, 60 Minutes, a little bit of PBS. And my mom was like a big ER person. My mom loved ER.
Sure.
Although I guess that probably came later. I don't know that we were rolling from Alf into ER, but these were just some of their favorite shows.
And when you were watching Alf, were you like, how old are you at this point?
Boy, so I was looking back, and I think Alf debuted in 86, so I was 4. So I think I probably caught Alf in its like last seasons. I don't think I was like, I don't think I was there watching the first season, but I think Alf, you know, ran for 4, so I was probably into it in the, you know, when I was like 6 or 7.
And I would
guess by the time you were 6, you had an Alf tattoo.
Right. Yeah. An Alf tramp stamp.
You're already in. It's always sexual, even as a child.
Yeah, I know. He imprinted on me early.
He was my
Fox Robin Hood. You know, people are so horny for that Robin Hood Fox. Mine was
Maid Marian, but I definitely I wanted to pattern myself on Fox Robin Hood.
I was a Steamboat Willie fella.
Sure. Well, that was your era, Sean.
Right. And now he's everywhere because he's in the public domain. You must be jacking off 24/7, dude.
I have to go.
I mean, you were just mostly surprised that you were seeing a non-human, you know, animated character moving around.
I didn't even understand what I was looking at.
You were just the week before
Is that a shadow?
You were just the week before run away from the train coming at you on the screen.
Right.
And that was probably a sexual feeling for you, too, running away from the train.
I still go to train stations all the time just to run away.
Right.
To put this just marginally back on track, why don't we stack the overview on Alf, just even lightly dipping into the past from it, into the behind-the-scenes stuff. I found it very interesting.
Right. Alf, like, ruined lives.
Yeah. It's just shocking. But let's start from the beginning. It was a sitcom that aired on NBC from September 22nd, 1986 to March 24th, 1990. Just several seasons. It was written and directed by Tom Patchett, the pilot was, who started on Bob Newhart and rose to executive producer. He was a co-creator of Buffalo Bill, and he was a partner with Jay Tarsis, who was, you know, an actor and a writer. The one thing that was sort of, and I wondered if it played in to his doing this show or being sort of someone they thought of is he wrote The Great Muppet Caper, which I might argue is
really
the best of the Muppet movies.
I had
no
idea.
At least one of the writers. And then he wrote the story, I think, with Jay Tarsus for Muppets Take Manhattan.
That's why Kermit keeps saying no problem in that.
I mean, there's a lot of crossovers. Very inexplicably, Kermit is trying to eat cats in that movie. It's very odd.
The guy had a bag of tricks. I think we all do. Like, yeah. As writers, you know, we all have stuff we come back to.
Yeah.
He also was the creator and EP on Working Girl, which is a show that I think we should cover at some point, which had Sandra Bullock as Working Girl, as I don't know the name of the character. Sorry, Melanie Griffith. came out and only ran 12 episodes. And also, Sean, with George Newbern, who you may
Our
remember.
Our old pal, yeah.
That's right, from Paczynski.
From Paczynski, yeah.
He did that the same year as Paczynski.
That was the best year of his life.
he was a sitcom, as a lot of the people, for some reason, we keep falling into. When we get to the weirder one that we're interested in, they are already like a Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart like person who's like, you know, just a total pro by the time they get to this.
Right. Came up old school and now they're branching out a little bit.
Right. And so what I didn't understand was, even looking at the credits, Patchett wrote the pilot, which usually means you're the creator, but it's co-created by him and puppeteer Paul Fusco, who was Alf. He was the puppeteer for Alf. And the story is that Paul Fusco went in to meet with Bernie Brillstein. You know, he was auditioning with this puppet character. And Bernie Brillstein, who was, you know, a hilarious, classic, old school Hollywood personality that I only met once in an elevator when I was meeting at Brillstein Gray and didn't know who he was. And he was just a Santa Claus figure in an undershirt talking about how the... in a very charming way about how the air conditioning was out and how much it was bothering him, but he was being very friendly. And I was like, that guy has to be Bernie Brillstein or somebody's dad. That is one of those two options. But anyway, he went in, he auditioned for him. He was Bernie Brillstein was kind of uninterested because he managed Jim Henson, which is another thing that I didn't know Brillstein handled him and regarded appropriately. Henson is like the best puppeteer. Whoever lived, and but then he did a performance as Alf, and Brillstein was like, you know, this is a hilarious, strong character, could be a series. I don't know how that led to Patchett get involved. If it is like, well, he wrote on the Muppet shows, or what happened?
Which came first?
I believe Great Muppet Caper came first. Mm. I don't know. I guess we'll get into whether it was a perfect matchup. But, I mean, the person who creates the perfect housing for this character certainly is, you know, it's undeniable in terms of the success of the show. And we'll get into the cast and everything. But as Jordan referenced, to me, what is interesting, and to me, the argument for the strength of this show and why I say I was surprised. And maybe it was just that my expectation was so low for it that I was like, oh, this is not offensively bad to me right off the top in terms of the character, the rhythm of the character, the delivery system of like his command of the puppet as a puppeteer, his sort of rhythm, the sensibility, the way that he plays off of the family and the family almost immediately, the parents becoming irritated and the child, you know, the boy becoming charmed and the daughter sort of being in the middle is kind of there immediately. The jokes are all, generally speaking, softball jokes. But to me, it's sort of like, well, they set up the Alf character kind of as a vaudevillian comic, almost intentionally cheesy, laughing at his own jokes, doing the ha, you know, mm-hmm. like hitting the table kind of thing. So it's sort of like, well, you're sort of setting it up. So he's supposed to be kind of like
not that funny,
I think. Mm-hmm. And I think it's you could argue it either way that we're supposed to think he's hilarious. But whatever the case, I feel like you watch a lot of pilots and it's just like all of these people seem like they're at sea, like. None of like, and I kind of, we watched Dear John as like one of our recent episodes, and it's just kind of like, it just feels like everybody is just muscling jokes and has no idea kind of what they're doing or what the purpose of this is. And I feel like this is like the dynamics all work. But as Jordan referenced, it was apparently a technical nightmare for all concerned immediately. They had to build it on a platform. You had to do endless amount of takes to get it right for the to get the puppet right, to reshoot stuff. They would have to dig holes, not dig holes, but like have certain holes in the platform for Fusco to, you know, sort of appear and then move it fully even to get in a different shot.
Yeah, it is a technically interesting way for like a puppet character to interact with human characters, right? Because I think usually when you see these kinds of things, the puppet has a little home base where they just always pop up from. It would be like if Alf was always in that kitchen window, it would be like, okay, that's where the puppeteer's set up, and you know, they don't move around a lot. But like Alf moves throughout the house, and so they have the puppet which talks, and then you have a guy in a suit for when Alf is like running around, and it is integrated pretty well into the show. Like, it is pretty seamless when you're getting the talking puppet Alf and when you're getting the guy in the suit. It moves pretty seamlessly, so I guess in that way, like, what they're doing is kind of ambitious and impressive, right? It's like Yeah, they do want to give the illusion that Alf can just go anywhere and he's everywhere in the house, as opposed to just like he pops up in his little Alf zone. So, you know, I will give it some points for that. And also, yeah, I totally understand why that just totally fucks up the ease of the multicam sitcom, which is built to be simply shot and reproduced. And it's like, oh, if you have this little guy who's moving all over the place and you have to hide... Probably, I mean, how many puppeteers do we think it took to operate Alf? Probably more than one.
They definitely had at least two, and I think one, the Fusco handled, I think, the mouth and the right hand, and then he had at least one helper who handled the left hand, and then there was obviously a different, a Hungarian little person named Michu Mizaros, who... was in the pilot and a few episodes after that, who was the full body Alf. And they decided, you know, Mizaros' services were too costly and time consuming. So they, I guess, departed from it. But I guess it's interesting. I agree with you in terms of being seamless when they cut to the full body Alf. But my overall take is it is like Kermit on the bicycle in the original Muppet movie. I find it disturbing every time you see him running around. And I feel like it was like the right move to phase that out anyway. I'm curious.
Well, and I will say, watching the pilot, I was shocked to see that aspect of the show, because I never watched the show, but I always presumed that it was just a stationary puppet all the time. So the fact that they even made that effort to me was kind of like admirable in a sense. Although, like you said, it's one thing to have, or you didn't say this, I'm putting words in your mouth, but you know, it's one thing to have a puppet that is a puppet, and it's another one to have that same puppet doing physical human actions where you go, what the fuck is going on right now? Like, he's running through the backyard, or when Kermit's riding the bike, it's disconcerting in terms of the reality of what you see most of the time.
I don't know. It's interesting. I really do want to, as we get into the show, dig into what bumped you so much and didn't bump me, because part of the reason I think it doesn't bother me is that often when there's a puppet, or a Muppet more accurately, not the brand Muppet, but the type of puppet, it kind of bumps me because it's like, well, this is obviously some hacky, terrible person who didn't have the craft or ability of anyone that worked with Henson. And so it looks kind of crappy and it reads kind of crappy and it's shot kind of crappy.
Alf looks dirty. The puppet looks dirty. I don't know if that was like a character choice, but the puppet always looks gross. While I was watching this, I'm like, Alf's fur looks gross. I bet Alf smells.
And you're right. That is something that could fit his persona.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
But you feel like it's not, it's just like somebody just rushed into this process.
Yeah, it just looks like a bad puppet. It looks like the puppet is bad. But right, yeah, I guess you could play that up of like, you know, Willie could walk in. It's like, Elf, what smells in here? Like,
but putting that aside,
I love to roll in garbage. I'm weird.
This guy's really got Elf. I guess it makes sense. You're going to conventions.
Yeah. Big guy.
It really would be awful if you're in a furry costume and then it, you know, at the end, you know, whoever you were with was like, I mean, that was the worst Elf he was doing the whole time.
Yeah, you know, you got to nail the voice first. That's I worked to get the voice right, and then I spent tens of thousands of dollars on the costume.
I appreciate that you have the costume, but could you do the voice as Kermit the Frog?
Oh, man, these chicks I pick up at furry conventions, they're impossible to get off.
Hey, Jordan, I hear it didn't work out with you and that lady. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, she wanted Alf's body, but Kermit's voice. I just can't keep up with the kinks.
What a freak.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, I'm
so
in
for
the
you.
Alf costume. I'm talking like Alf. I'm sorry. I'm old fashioned.
I gotta be me. And by me I mean Alf. So for you, the puppet itself doesn't work.
I like the, I mean, and I will admit that, like, I did like things about this. And the theme song in particular, the theme song fucking rocks. The theme song is very funky. A lot of prominent slap and bass. I liked the theme song. But yeah, I mean, I liked Alf, but it's like going on a ride at Universal Studios. You're like, this is fun. If this was a Disney ride, this would fucking rule. And I think it is the, you know, there's the off-brand Henson-ness of this. Like, you're like, yeah, Alf's all right, but like, if this was a Henson character, it would, it would, you would love it immediately upon seeing it. It would be so much more lifelike. It would look like it was properly cleaned and cared for, unlike this puppet, which seems like it was like pulled out of an aunt's closet.
Part of that's your a, critique that's is an that they're interesting, not taking care of the puppet. cleaning the puppet.
I think you're making an interesting point. First of all, I'm going to disagree with you about the theme song. To me, that felt like a missed opportunity because we were still in the time then of like lyrics to the theme song, and it felt like they could just like do some kind of comic backstory or something there. Something
Alan Thicke could have sang the theme song.
Yeah,
I mean, I agree with Sean on that, and I will also say, like, even if you even if you're just going instrumental, if you compare it to another show that was name checked in this in the pilot, which is Mork and Mindy, like that's such a joyful kind of great upbeat thing, and this is very synthy. It kind of, ironically, even though it's in the future of when the show was made, feels more like a 90s kind of, you know,
it does
hacky.
A little bit.
Also, I was gonna say, your point about the Muppets I think is a great one, because you know, the Muppets have some odd looking characters, but you look at you just look at them and you immediately like them. And with Alf, you look at that character and you're not like, oh, I really like that guy, you know? You're like, ugh, but this seems weird.
Well, this is where it's interesting, sort of to Jordan's point, because I feel like Jordan's just saying, the puppet bothered him, is what I'm getting as the subtext. Yeah. Which is fascinating, because you were, I assume, drawn to it as a child?
Yeah, I was. We were, the house was full of Alf shit. I loved it, and it did not, and I felt like some nostalgic feelings watching this, but it did not take me back in the way that like watching the Muppet movie does. I mean, if you watch the movie now as a, you know, 40-year-old, it's still like, ugh, oh my God, here, there's all my buddies and this is still so funny. But like, this was just like, ooh boy, kids are dumb. I was dumb.
Maybe you're looking at Alf more like Willie the father character, and you're just like, look, this guy is he's hindering the efficiency of the house.
He's peeping on my wife in the shower. a line I don't not a lot of Alf has stayed in my brain, but a line that I do remember loving as a kid that came up in one of the other episodes was Alf going, "Nice underwear, Kate," because he was always trying to like peep on the wife, which
So he was a full-on creep.
Yeah, I think he did like wanna cuck Willie.
Oh, he wanted to fuck Willie.
No, he wanted to cuck Willie.
Cuck Willie.
To turn
gotcha.
To make him make to make a cuckold of him.
Sure.
Any chance he wanted to suck Willie? Because I feel like we're on a roll.
Maybe.
Was that part of your role play when you were in the costume?
Yeah. What I'll do is I'll find a couple, and
someone
I'll say,
who
okay.
looks a little bit like Max Wright optimally, but right. not necessarily.
And I give him glasses if he doesn't have them. And I say, "You're Willie Tanner," and then I say to the woman, "You're Kate Tanner," and I will be Alf. And I'll be like, "I'm about to go back to my home planet. Let's make this a night to remember."
So we can get to this whenever. The most delightful aspect of the behind the scenes thing is just how much this cast over time was driven insane by the production process yeah. with this puppet. That the puppet, which was just a puppet, and it doesn't sound like, even though he had some weird things, like he, I don't know, you could argue that he's just, it's just commitment to the character, that Fusco would just like not want Alf referred to as a puppet outside, you know, in press or whatever. He would always have to be referred to as a space alien, which you could argue is protecting the brand and
yeah,
whatever, stuff like that.
I did a little bit with Fozzie Bear one time, and you can't call him a puppet. You can call him a bear, or you can call him a comedian, but you can't call him a puppet, and you can't.
I love that you can
joke,
call him a comedian.
Yeah,
sure. So that's fantastic. But that, like, Max Wright, who played the father, like, publicly was, you know, he was irritated that this puppet got all the good lines. He was quoted as saying he was hugely eager to have Alf over with. The second the last scene was shot, he walked off the set and, like, there was no
the
goodbyes. Just left. Shadeen, who plays the Kate Tanner, said there was no joy on the set. It was a technical nightmare, extremely slow, hot, and tedious. A 30-minute show took 20-25 hours to shoot.
Oh, boy. Oh, my God.
Shadeen said some of the adults had difficult personalities. The whole thing was a big dysfunctional family. And it's astonishing that Alf was really...
Can I just say, like, doing a multicam sitcom, yeah. and, you know, because we've done that, and sure. it's like a 2.5-hour shoot, on
right.
a multicam,
or, you
is
know, it can go
fucking...
to like some crazy like 6 hours, like if it's
yeah,
a long
but
night,
I'm just no, no, no. My point is, a 2.5-hour shoot is still a fucking nightmare.
Oh,
know?
Sure, absolutely.
Like, it's still way too long, and the audience doesn't understand that they're allowed to leave anytime they want. They're all being held hostage there by the DJ or whatever. So to be there for 25 hours while they do this, it just feels like that would drive anybody crazy.
Now, I have to assume, because they say that because of all the technical problems, they didn't shoot it with an audience. So all of the laughter, which it really sounds like it, are all laugh track stuff. And it's always weird that, I think, as I may have mentioned on the show, there's usually the complaint is, you're really boosting all those laughs. And to me, it's always even weirder when it's this ghostly little quiet tittery, like, there's an audience somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, I don't know, either go for it or don't go for it.
Put in the part where the audience reluctantly chuckles slightly.
Where the audience
there's so many, like, non jokes.
Put in the sound that communicates, is the audience sure they're supposed to be there?
There's so many non jokes in this that get that little titter.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
like, there's this run of, like, the kid going, like, he's hairy and he's heavy. And he's right. hairy and heavy. And it's like, that's nothing. That's just not. And they do add those little titters. It is like.
I wrote yes. all of that down in my notes because I found it so weird. Like, that exact thing that the kid was just repeating words that everybody had already said and repeating yeah. the same words. And the right. audience was so on board. I didn't realize it was not shot in front of a live audience. I was like, why are those people, you know, what's wrong with those people? They're so gung-ho for this kid to just right. say heavy and hairy.
Yeah, the kid yeah. the kid sucks. The kid's annoying. I mean, I think the only human character who I, you know, whose performance I kind of liked was, I do think Willie is kind of giving something interesting. And maybe that, like, it's that contempt coming through. Maybe it's his natural weirdness. He does seem like a weirdo version of a sitcom dad. Like, we kind of see him in the beginning in that cold open, which has clearly been cut in a weird place and had some voiceover added. So uh-huh. like that, whatever that cold open was, there's some information we didn't get, but like, you see him and he has this space monitoring equipment. He's like a UFO nut. And he also has a model train, which I think is a good detail, because the mind that gravitates towards space ham radio probably also gravitates towards model trains.
Right.
And I think there's an interesting idea of, like, this guy is a conspiracy nut who finally contacted the alien that he'd always been looking for. And, like, maybe that is something they play with later in the series. Maybe he, you know, I don't know, like, wants to search for Bigfoot or whatever. But, like, they at least did a little bit of interesting work adding some color to the classic sitcom dad. And I think that is not work they did with any other human character. There's just, like, the annoying neighbor and her mean husband and the two kids, one's a kid and one's a teen, and a mom who doesn't want you to drink soda. No soda, Alf. Don't drink soda, Alf. You better don't give him soda, Alf. Are you drinking soda? It's just like, this sucks. This is no one thought about this for more than 4 fucking seconds. Yeah, so I mean, I think that, like, by virtue of being a pretty good sitcom performer and for maybe being a little bit more interesting than the typical stock character, I do think Willie comes out of this looking okay.
I have a lot of opinions, many which disagree with just in general.
This will get spicy. Let's do it.
But Sean, do you want to pipe off first or should I go first?
No, please, by all means, let's hear your opinion so that I can disagree with them. You know?
First of all, I think do you know how much sugar is in soda, Jordan? I mean, that mother is just
12 teaspoonfuls.
I don't think kids should drink
this guy's
soda.
In Big Soda's pocket. yeah, I mean, I certainly can't disagree
with
you.
Excuse me while I crack a delicious diet slice.
I can't disagree with the general characterizations are all just like, we got the alien puppet. The rest of it is just down the middle. To me, you can kind of argue almost putting a show revolving around a Muppet puppet. It's not even Mork and Mindy where it's a human alien is such a big swing. The rest of it has to be something that the audience understands. Now, I'm not saying over time they couldn't kind of refine the characters, and maybe they did, or, you know, maybe I assume they didn't. But to me, like, one thing is, I thought, like, the kid, even though, yes, he's definitely a kid actor, I was like, oh, that's of the annoying blank-faced, I'm saying a line and I'm unconnected to a line kid actors that they possibly could have.
Sure.
I thought that kid was okay.
Boy, you really have high standards, Andy.
Did you think the kid was bad or good, Sean?
I thought he was terrible, and my feeling about it... See, I never watched TV during this era, so I only know all of it from... You know,
Sean is a Mormon.
You read Encyclopedia Britannica when you had finished your homework and said your prayers.
But it feels like someone moved my bookmark in the Britannica.
I was researching fjords.
I'm going to have to go back to Aardvark.
Yes. I was researching fjords and the bookmark was moved to fauna. I've already read about the fauna, Mother.
I feel like all these shows, from what I have seen, and I have not dug deep into it, but this is one of the shows that I feel like they were just getting away with something. Like, having that kid as a kid in that show, they were tricking people into thinking that was something that deserved to be on TV. And not just the kid, but in general, it was like, well, we got away with that one, you know?
Well, that was certainly, not having watched it at the time, that was certainly my external thought at the time, which is why part of the reason why I never watched it is just like, this is a shitty product. They're clearly trying to sneak by. It's an interesting question of like, would it take it to watch more of the series to evaluate it? I guess I'm judging it against how poorly functioning most pilots are. And how much you're trying to figure out in the pilot. And I figure, like, it's all there. And this kind of goes to my larger point. And I appreciate what you're saying about the father, that he is, like, slightly more interesting. But to me, Max Wright is the heart of this show on the level of Dean Martin to Jerry Lewis. Like, that his attitude toward Alf, which is, it's like they have a few moments of him, like, kind of like Alf is talking to him. I don't remember what he's talking to him, but that he's excited to talk about. Maybe it was just about how it crashes on the roof and that, you know, maybe you could, you know, fix this or that. And he's like, you know, I try to, but it's sometimes it's hard to, you know, make the time or whatever it was. But then he's in the slot. He's in the zone of like, he's the irritated father. Sure. This is the classic, whether it's Mr. Belvedere or whoever the character is, that's the outsider character that's irritating the father. And he's, I think, quintessential in an impressive way. And it's funny that maybe the reason is because he was constantly filled with rage the entire time he was on the show, to the point that I think Artie Lang told a story that at some point he snapped and literally attacked the puppet itself, which I hope that that's true because that's the funniest thing ever.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the difficult things with a show like this, and this is one of the difficulties with any kind of comedy pairing, is like, the straight guy doesn't get to be like, this was Alf's show. It was Alf, right?
For sure.
And he is supposed to be the one who let Alf be Alf. And what I appreciated about him is that he is still able, because I find him as an actor and in his delivery, I find him amusing. And so he was able to make me interested in what he was saying and make me laugh on stuff that was mostly just setting up Alf. I get why a guy like that would be like, fuck Alf, give me a fucking joke, you know?
Right.
But I thought he was the thing in the entire pilot that I was like, oh, I get why he's there, you know?
Also, just to cover the rest of the cast, and Shadeen, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, is Kate, the mother. Andrea Elson is the daughter. Benji Gregory is the fantastic virtuoso performance as Brian Tanner.
If you think about virtuoso performances as far as what can you do that takes the least effort and the least ability and the least execution, on that scale, he is a true virtuoso.
Right.
Jordan appropriately got it started off with the opening. And Sean, do you want to just start taking us through it?
Yeah. Okay, so we open on a freeze frame of the two of them in, I guess, the garage or the man cave or the, I'm not quite sure where they were.
It's a little workshop. He's got all his like ham radios,
his oscilloscope and his
space radios.
And you feel like, Jordan, he's specifically trying to receive messages from space. That's his intention.
That's what I thought. And you're right. They don't explicitly say what he's doing out there.
I think
this is a longer scene that there was cut.
I think you're right.
And where he's maybe explaining, like, I've always thought there was something more out there. I don't want to feel so alone or something. But
Because later in the pilot, he does say, so you could kind of infer what you're saying,
sure.
I've been waiting for this my whole life, and now it's finally come true,
right.
Which would imply that maybe you saw that earlier.
I also just, you know, whether or not they cut that part, I came in on it going, oh, they're trying to fuck in this moment, you know, like that was my interpretation of what was going on. Like, can I show you my ham radio? That kind of thing, you know?
Right. You know, the kids are inside screaming, not doing their homework. You want to bring the wife out to the shed.
Right.
Show her your ham radio.
I really was like, what are they doing out there? And it never got
crazy.
Explained. You know, then he picks up something on his infrared radio band, which is hard to get away from. It's a pulsar or a satellite. I noticed that too.
A pulsar. They just like took two space words.
Technical terms.
Right.
They're like, here are two space words we know. Let's do these bumps and
it could be a quasar or a neutron.
Sure.
And he immediately tries to talk to the quasar or the satellite.
It's either an asteroid or a Neil Armstrong. Okay, let's head to the backstage bar and grill. So fucking
He can't understand the language, and like at that point I really enjoyed the attempt to create some kind of crisis in the sky by having everyone look up and flashing the lights on and off. Like,
right.
I just thought that was such a such a game try, you know, of like, we don't have money for special effects, so let's just execute it the best we can.
And the kids run in saying, "What's that in the sky?" Yeah. So the kids were like looking at the sky and don't and have seen. And none of the neighbors seem to have seen this thing that they were so alarmed by that they ran. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys a question, though, because I obviously you're correct. And even as a child, I probably would wanted to have seen the worst version of the spaceship, you know, crashing on the roof in miniatures.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I would have wanted and would have been a little bit more world building. Do you feel like, obviously it's a budgetary reason that they're just like, there's something outside we can't see. Do you feel like they needed it story-wise?
I did feel like they didn't need it. I was fine with it, you know? I thought, like,
and I think that the little, that you see an Alf in a little pod coming through the roof. And I thought that looked kind of cool. That was a nice little, you know, piece of practical set building. So yeah, I the amount of ship you see is not the problem.
I was surprised that they had so much dirt on the roof of their garage that came through when the hole was punched in the ceiling.
Yeah. Yes.
Just, well, tremendous cascades.
Ship has
dirt
a lot of dirt on it.
I think the same person that was assigned to clean the dirt off Alf was assigned to clean the dirt off the roof.
He's a teamster, he was on his break.
So
you gotta pay me golden time if you want me to clean the Alf.
Come on, Larry, just do it. So they have a visitor. They're you know, all of a sudden they're in this position where they have this creature and they have to figure out what to do, and then we go into what the thing that Jordan loved and that I did not care for, which was the theme song, and we learn a little bit about where things might go in the future.
Do we think the tone of the show is sweet, or do we think the tone of the show is cynical, or it's a little bit of both? Because the credits are very sweet, and it kind of does almost counterbalance what the rest of the thing is. There's also a lot of stuff in it that having been on Goldberg's for so long, really feels the vibe of Goldberg's in a way that I never processed before, because I was not familiar with the show. I don't know if it's in the credits. There's definitely recurring images of the main kid on Goldberg's, Adam, looking at himself in a mirror with a video camera.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like it's right out of this.
Yeah, so Alf is filming with a video camera in the opening credits. So we know that he's basically an auteur who's going to go on to dominate Hollywood as a filmmaker.
Oh, is that what they're saying?
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
This is Alf is kind of like, you know, in a lot of ways it's the same story as the Fablemans.
Yes.
Can't wait until a scene with David Lynch at the end.
Right.
So then they're in the living room and Alf is passed out or asleep. This is where I noted down that they said he was hairy. They didn't want to put him on the couch. They said he was heavy. And the kid goes, "Heavy and hairy." And that's really the first hard joke of the episode. And
then,
you know, he wants Alf to stay in his room. Oh, that's where the dad says it's an Alf, an alien life force, which...
I'm just saving you the mentions. I'm just saving you all the Alf guys in your replies.
Again,
I did
not actually watch the show. So let's just be clear about
Sean, it wasn't just a random breakdown of an acronym that they reverse engineered from the name Alf. It's alien life form.
This is interesting. So I think it's something kind of funny about the show is that, like, when Alf is sending messages to other aliens, it's like, "Brian, Donna, I'm on Earth. Come find me." And Alf's name is not Alf. It's Gordon Shumway.
Right.
So, which I'm like, that's kind of funny. That's funny. That's the alien's name is Gordon Shumway. He just has this normal man name. And I think that the comic Dan Telfer has a bit about this. So find Dan's bit about this on YouTube if it actually exists. But it's pretty fucked up that his name is Gordon Shumway and they just call him Alf. Right?
Yeah.
Like, he has a normal man's name. Call him Gordon. Why do you call him Alf? It's like, mean.
Is that
what
dead naming
is? You could never get away with that nowadays. You just couldn't. You know?
You couldn't.
Yeah. That's true.
Can't call an alien an elf. You can't tell your female coworkers they look nice.
Yeah.
The woke mob is coming for us again.
The woke mob. Can't give Alf a back rub.
I even when I read that, I was like, wait, what? And then if you watch that scene in the pilot, it's like, you're just calling him something else?
Yeah.
I don't understand. He has a name. I don't understand. You didn't even ask. Here's the other thing that's
sort
of a
weird
larger
name. Just call him right. The name.
It's also interesting in comparison to Mork and Mindy, which immediately has more world building in kind of an interesting way. But am I wrong that the mythology is that the planet he's from exploded or?
Correct.
He does say exploded, yes. So I
and
guess
so is the idea that everyone on his planet left, and so when he's talking to Donna and all these people, that it's these are other aliens from his planet that have kind of, you know, are out there in the universe. They've been scattered.
Unclear.
My sense was he was not sure either. Like he was, we don't know what happened. It was an emergency. Whatever blew up, which I think we learn later what the cause of the planet blowing up was. I'm saying later in the series.
Yes, and I will say as an example, because I don't disagree with you, I think that it is. There's certainly joke-wise, well, I understand you got a lot of other stuff on your plate and the technical aspects of this of this puppet and everything. Give it another alt pass. Come on.
Well, and I will say,
these are placeholder jokes.
It's weird to me, and we'll get into this, I think, later. But the second episode, the joke writing was real joke writing. Like there was just no real jokes in the first episode. So I don't understand how that got through the way it did, because there are obvious punchline lines in the dialogue that were not punchlines. And it's clear that they are capable of doing that in the second episode.
Yeah, well, the second episode quite a bit funnier than this one. And I realize I'm throwing bows at a pilot, and pilots are bad for many reasons, and they're noted to death. And I'm sure there was something going on here where it was like, this is a NBC ass show at 8 o'clock, probably on a Thursday, like. It couldn't be weird. Like, and I'm sure they were just fighting against, like, I don't know, an alien show. So I'm sure that, like, so much stuff had to be safe because they have kind of a weird premise on their head. But, I mean, it seems so generic and joke-free.
Well, one of the things that did seem to be happening over time on the series was there were a lot of the network, as to your point, was always pushing in the direction of, like, Alf can't drink beer. Alf can't, you know, because then a kid's going to drink beer. There was an episode later where Alf is, I don't know if he's electrocuted in a bath. And like, you don't want to do that because then a kid might do that. He gets amnesia.
Imitatable behavior, they call it.
Right. So, you know, they were operating inside some restrictions of certain things that they could do. And that might have softened some of their, you know, some of the jokes that they might have wanted to go for. Although, frankly, I kind of feel like for the time, this is another thing. For the time, I feel like the fact that Alf he wants to eat the cat, that he doesn't, he is selfish. He doesn't, there's no real point of him in the first episode or the second episode of him being like, oh, but I consciously helped this family, or I consciously am there for this family.
By the way, my little brother, when we were kids, ate a cat because of this show. So.
Well, see, there you go. So then maybe the network was right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did he prepare it?
Over easy.
I don't know, let's not explore that further. But the thing I was going to say, just in terms of the jokes, was I did enjoy the idea about his sort of planet exploding and him sort of leaving, that when he's like, you have to fix my, you know, my spaceship. And for some reason, Willie thinks he can. It was like, all right, let me get in there and fix that. I don't know why that's such a basic thing that, like, and he later he's even like, yeah, they did. I need different parts. It's sort of like, well, I don't, are you a mechanical genius? I don't understand. But independent of that, the thing that I loved is the detail of like, Alf is just like, when he's asking him questions about Alf, is just like, I don't know. I just went in, got into it, and I pushed the button and it went. Like, I don't know how it works in the same way that's just like, I know vaguely how a car works. I couldn't. you know, repair it or do anything to it. So I just liked that as a general kind of
right. He's not guy. He's not sophisticated. He's just a normal guy. He's right. You know, on his planet, he's just Gordon Shumway.
Yeah, it's a funny reversal on what our expectations usually
sci-fi,
are of aliens.
Like, he's a fighter right. pilot who knows everything about. Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Not to bring up Battlestar Galactica, Jordan. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Never seen it. I've only seen Elf, which I hate. I only watch this one show, which I hate.
But they did do a thing in this scene, which I liked in a weird way, which is they finally referenced E.T. because right. it's yes. so clearly a very specific reaction to E.T. Obviously, the blowing up the planet thing is very Superman, but the you know, even like
yeah, the
Alf
last
is,
son of Melmac.
Yes. But, you know, in this world, E.T. is a movie that exists that is a reference point for these people who now have an E.T. type character living with them.
Although yes, I appreciated that too.
Not as high tech as E.T.
And that it's E.T. is also an acronym. It's clearly was right. built on the back of E.T.
Right.
In an appropriate way, in a way where it is one more step parody.
Yeah. Here's an example of, like, this feels like it's setting up a joke and it never came, was the father going, he could be dangerous, he could be diseased, he could be hostile, he could have hostile friends or acquaintances. And there was no laugh on that. There was no finish to that. It was yeah. just a run of setup that didn't pay off in any way. And that's why I say, like, I was in a good way surprised by the second episode being so much funnier than the first episode.
Mm. Yeah, it's like, I wonder if there was a harder joke. If Alf is like, you know, there are some bookies I owe money to, you know, yeah, and they're like, take that out. He can't gamble.
Kids
you know.
Are going to be bookies.
Well, since
kids
you
are
make... going
to become bookies so they can meet Alf.
But on that note of even the idea of the bookie joke, which 100% seems like something that Alf either might do or actually did do in the series, this is another element of the world building that I'm curious where you guys land on in terms of a lot of it is some things he's confused by, like in the second episode, the puzzle, and some things he's like making deep cut references to human yeah. culture.
Yeah, what Alf does and doesn't know about is so confusing. Like, there's a thing later where he's like calling into a radio contest so he can win a Ferrari, but right. he doesn't know the name of the song. And so, like, the daughter tells him what the song was, and then he makes a joke about the song like he knew it all along. It is very confusing. Like, you can have Alf make all of the human pop culture jokes you want. Just have them say, like, yeah, we pick up your radio signals on our planet. So I know about Tutti Frutti. Like, that's
right.
You know, and then you could just have Alf make jokes. But the fact that no one does that, but he still makes Earth jokes, is so fucking weird and confusing.
And see, I think that comes out of fear of establishing rules.
Sure.
Because once you establish a rule, you have to follow that rule. And so it's kind of a mechanism to go, like, we can make whatever joke we want to whenever we want. We don't have to have any explanation for it. But I found that frustrating that there was, like you said, nothing that indicated why he knew certain things.
Right. The only thing that I kind of do, I do have the sense, I think it's established later in the series, if not the pilot, is that he has been listening to sort of signals from Earth. Maybe I'm just headcanoning that. I'm making up my own explanation for what the series is telling me.
I've read your Alf fan fiction. I love it. It's nasty.
It's mostly about Jordan's experiences.
Right.
But yes, even if it's that, it's kind of like, oh, I guess I kind of buy that. But it feels like you need to address that at some point. You know, he looks at the toilet. He's sort of like, oh, it's an interesting concept just at the toilet. But it's like, you don't know what the toilet is, but you're... So, I don't know. It didn't bump me in a major way. I think it only bumped me on the level of I like world building. And I was like, I feel like you... And maybe over time they really did build up stuff about Melmac and everything else. But I was like, I feel
there
like
was
you could really have fun building
there was a cartoon prequel
that.
About Alf on Melmac.
Yes. Have you ever seen that?
I loved the cartoon, too. So I loved Alf and Alf Tales, where Alf, like, reenacted popular movies.
That was a separate cartoon?
It was a separate cartoon, yeah. So there was... You remember Chipmunks and then Chipmunks Go to the Movies?
No.
Ah, so, okay. This was kind of a... This was a template back then. So, yeah, you had the Alf Melmac show, Alf on Melmac, which is actually pretty cool. Has kind of cool animation, another good theme song. And they do call him Gordon. They call him Gordon on Melmac, so they, like, stick to that.
Because he's not alien. He's still a life force or life form, whatever your term of art is, but he's not an alien.
But then there was Alf Tales, where it was Alf doing Alf versions of, like, you know, Robin Hood and, you know, King Kong and stuff.
Was that the structure of Muppet Babies?
Muppet Babies, I think they did full parody plots? Episodes. They did, like, a Star Wars episode. So I think that was, like, a kind of episode they could do in Muppet Babies. And also they could open the closet to reveal clips from movies, which I always liked. But Muppet Babies weren't necessarily doing parodies.
And I feel like it makes sense that you were like, I liked Alf Tales, I liked Alf on Melmac, because when you're a kid, you're like, I like this thing. I want to see more of this thing.
Right.
What else can there be of this thing?
I like Mr. T. I want to eat his cereal.
Yes, correct. Okay, so we're in the living room, and this is where they really do some great POV stuff, because we see the family as Alf slowly starts to regain consciousness, and they're all peering down at him. It just struck me as so funny, because there's no way anybody would ever get their heads that close to anybody else in real life unless they were trying to cram themselves into a camera shot.
Right. And they're in like a fisheye lens. Yes, so it looks like they're in a 90s skateboard video. I'm like, shouldn't they play Suicidal Tendencies in the background of this? Yeah, right. And yeah, the family all has their heads pressed against everyone else's head so that everyone can fit in that fisheye shot. Yeah. It is really weird.
And that's where Alf speaks for the first time, and we realize that he can communicate with these people. And it's very exciting as a viewer.
It is really exciting.
Oh my gosh, he's not just going to fly back to his planet. He's going to stay and interact with these people.
And then we're going to watch a regular family who met an alien one time.
Right. I only talk about it constantly. I only put the alien puppet in this show because you need a hook. But this is really about this family.
Bob, we got a note from the network. They want to keep the puppet on the show.
I haven't built the series Bible around that. I can't do this.
Come on, Bible Schmeibel. Just do it. So he's staying. He's staying, and then we cut to the next morning. And again, I love the 90s-ness of the alarm clock that is just not like anything anybody has anymore, of just the digital alarm clock that goes, And so Alf is in bed with Kate.
This is actually my one legit laugh of the episode.
So
they do that thing where, you know, they're both in bed and they look at each other and they both start screaming. And then Willie goes, "What's going on in there?" And Alf is just like, "Oh, nothing, just some screaming." And I'm like, that's pretty funny. And then I did not laugh for the remainder of the episode, but I'm like, all right, that was pretty good.
Well, I would add one more laugh in this scene for me, which was when he said, I don't remember the sentence, but whatever it was about the next door neighbor whose name is Mrs. Akmanek, and he says, sounds like a typo.
Oh, yeah, and that is kind of funny.
Now, I had that written down as a funny joke. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny. But it also speaks to what we were talking about, which is like, so Alf knows that there's such a thing as typos, but he doesn't understand what a jigsaw puzzle is.
Right. I think he eats a puzzle in the second episode.
In the second episode.
Which actually, that's kind of funny, too. It's pretty funny.
So he's learning all sorts of things in the bathroom, and it sets up the thing of, I'm going to take a shower. Do not let Mrs. Akmanek see you, because that will be trouble.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, of course, Alf pulls the shades up and dances around to expose himself to Mrs. Akmanek.
And you can see in that moment why kids would like Alf. He's a rascal. He's trying to cause trouble. He's trying to...
And I do. She is the kind of like boilerplate nosy neighbor. And we see her husband for like 1 second. And I do like how the husband is in like silk pajamas and smoking a cigar.
It's like amazing. And then in the next episode, he's in an undershirt smoking a cigar. It's just like,
I'm like, this is who the show should be about. It should be about this guy and Alf running a strip club together.
I don't know. Maybe you got your reboot pitch.
Yeah, maybe.
It's all IP. The mom is obviously played by
Liz Sheridan.
Does anybody
have Paul Fusco's email? I need to get in touch with Paul Fusco.
The mom is played, Mrs. Achmanek, is played by Liz Sheridan, who played Jerry's mother in Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And is great in this, I think.
Yeah, she's a good, like, reliable sitcom actor and doing good with the material.
A bit better than the husband, is my take. I think the husband is really just playing it, like, down the middle, and she's... Sure. You know, she's be asked to do something very specific and cliche, but she's doing it well, in my opinion.
I'm gonna triple down on my. There was actually some good jokes in this sequence. Okay, or, I don't know. This isn't even really a joke, but I did like that the husband says, "Yeah, and I'm Sean Penn." Like that just felt like such a weird specific.
Yeah.
Of like, this is the hottest guy I can think of. You know?
I'm Sean Penn, me, an ugly guy. I'm ugly.
This guy got to marry Madonna.
I'm not a beautiful man like Sean Penn.
Who we will learn later was very problematic.
But in this period,
just a hunk you could mention to get a laugh.
Do you think it's like that they thought, well... We gotta pick a guy that this guy would like. He's kind of a tough guy, you know. You know, De Niro isn't enough of a hunk at this point. Right. So
Who are the hunks of 1986? I guess maybe Swayze. You could always.
Yeah, and I'm Lorenzo Lamas.
Sure.
And
I'm Wallace Shawn over here.
No, Jordan, that's the reverse of what we were looking
for. Yeah, and I'm Errol Flynn.
I'm that train that comes at the screen. Ooh.
It just felt like such a weird specific reference that I was like, it made me laugh, I guess probably for the wrong reasons, because I was like, why would he ever say Sean Penn? Like that just seems like such a, that they were sitting in the writer's room and going, yes, that's the one. Thank you, Bob.
You know, the guy from Falcon and the Snowman.
Yeah. What is Sean Penn in at this point?
This is a fantastic question.
You talking about the guy from Bad Boys where he was in the little prison there? That was earlier.
The guy from Taps with that new up-and-comer Tom Cruise?
All right. So he's engaged in this relationship with the neighbor. He's not supposed to be seen by her. She's very suspicious. Her husband disbelieves her. And we're out of that scene. And then we're into the garage where the dad is trying to fix the spaceship. And he's having a real hard time. And this is where we get to the radio competition where the song. And again, this to me was like looking up in the sky instead of the special effects. Is she listens to the song on the phone and goes... It's Born in the USA, as opposed to being able to get an actual song that they could use and listen to on the radio.
So this is interesting. In the second episode, which we'll be discussing over there on Patreon.
if you want to bring that up, Jordan, then you can bring it up. But,
they use the audio from Psycho. It's like,
yeah,
it is actually, that is the audio from Psycho.
I think it is. I think it's actually
only the same little clip over and over and over again. It felt like to me, like,
oh, did you look that up, Jordan? Because I felt like that was a recreation from Psycho.
Oh, interesting. I assumed that it was, and I was kind of impressed. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool that they like actually went to the trouble to get this. The second episode is like kind of it's so funny to like, we have this down the middle sitcom. Episode 2, slasher parody. We're going to totally change the genre for the second episode so people don't know what the fuck they're watching.
It's kind of admirable.
Yeah, it is a little bit. It's a weird
but
swing.
But it also is crazy based on the amount of pressure. Also, I mean, we're going to get into it over on the Patreon. that they pick a plot where the bulk of the show is just Mrs. Achmonick and not the other the family members.
Yeah.
It's very odd.
Not to talk too much about the weirdness of the second episode on this discussion of the pilot episode, but also they start with a pretty down-the-middle premise, which is Alf has to babysit. I'm like, great, right. That's episode two. That is some episode two-ass shit if I ever
We'll get
it.
To know the kid.
Yeah, exactly, and their relationship, and they'll do, mm-hmm. It's like, no, we're setting up this complicated thing where the neighbor is babysitting the kid, but she's watching Psycho, and Alf is hiding from her, and also someone is breaking into the house, and it's mimicking Psycho. It's just like so, it's so complicated. Anyway.
It does feel like it's, and often I feel like you can see the threads of what the discussion was.
Right.
In an episode of television of like, oh, they introduced this idea that would be a fine idea for this show, and then they shifted to something else. And I don't know if they shifted in that episode because it was like, well, we want it to be more about Alf trying to prove that he could take care of the kid or whatever. It was interesting, you know, but sure. It's like, it totally was a discussion that they had in the writer's room of like, all right, what's episode two? How about Alf babysits? Great. We're done. No, wait.
Yeah.
You know?
And I know
he's got to be locked in a room. Otherwise, why would he eat the jigsaw puzzle?
We all laughed at the puzzle eating thing, so let's back
all of our
that.
Jokes were soft in the pilot. We were doing too much coke.
Yeah, and I know I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth here when I'm saying, like, I'm complaining about the cliche-ness of it, and then I'm also complaining that the second episode is like this weird left turn. But I don't know, it is indicative of how, like, it does not seem like anyone knows what they're doing.
I feel like the thing you always get in, or this was always conventional wisdom before everything became serialized, is like, just repeat the beats of the pilot a number of episodes so that people get on board and they know who the characters are and we can all figure out. So yeah, that second episode was a huge left turn in that sense.
But it, I don't know, it still worked for me. We'll get
to
that. Oh,
it was great.
Later.
It was great. I can't wait to go on Patreon. Okay, so we're in the workshop. The dad is not able to fix the spaceship. Alf does a speech about how he's all alone. He's not able to go back to his planet. He undercuts it by turning to the daughter and saying, was I being too dramatic? And then he, for the second time, goes after the cat. He's going to snack on the cat.
I think it's an impressively dark trait to build into your main character. And maybe it's sort of built on the fact that unlike me, many people are not cat lovers. But
yeah, in cats thing has like endured. Like Alf became a punchline, and it's like, what do you remember about Alf? It's, you know, that he lived with a human family and he ate cats. And I think right. That like there are glimpses of a like more interesting, weirder show. And maybe that's where it started. Like maybe it did start as something a little more like counterculture or a parody of sitcoms or something like that. But yeah, and I think the eating cats is like a little glimpse of maybe where the show started or maybe what they wanted it to be, because it is weird and funny and it is super memorable. Like, I mean, you could walk into any comedy club and make an Alf's eating cats joke and it would kill.
Yeah. I mean, it is also funny to think that I would assume it's all built on the idea that he's never going to get to eat the cat. If he actually eats a cat, then you lose the audience forever.
End of series.
Sure.
Yeah. It's all built on him wanting to eat a cat. But if he gets that cat, that's it.
It's been a long time since I've read Save the Cat. Is that a reaction to Alf? Is that a reaction
no,
to...
No, that post-dated Alf, but that is a hilarious reversal. What about Alf? Alf wanted to
loved
eat the
him.
Cat.
The cat saved himself. Nobody saved that cat. All right. Well, we're in the next scene. They're watching Sesame Street, which is like, again, there's so many like specific references that you would reference if you were making a show about puppets in this episode, because they immediately about puppets from outer space. They immediately reference Sesame Street and then Mork from Ork.
Yeah.
So at least they're not blind to how much they are taking from other sources, you know.
There is another, I think it's around this area, where a good joke, and it's not a fantastic joke, but it's a slight bit of, it's a tiny bit of world building also, which is whatever prompts him to, Alf promises to do something and says, cross my heart, and he crosses his head instead.
Oh,
it's
I missed
that. Sort of an offhanded thing.
I missed that. That's
but
funny.
It's like, oh, the heart is in his head.
Yeah, I thought that was just a blooper. I thought that was, you know, a cross wire between the puppeteer and the dialogue.
The hand doesn't reach that far down the body. It's like the hand can only
go. He's trying to cross his heart. And then the genius editor was like, wait a minute.
Just CGI it in.
What a puppet can and can't do is really interesting. I worked on a puppet-based TV show for a bit, and like, you could do so many things with them, but having them touch another puppet was a huge deal, and having them pick something up was a huge deal. Like, that will add 2 hours to your day. And like, anytime we pitched anything where it was like, oh, these characters hug or they high five or something, the like puppeteers would come back and go, is there any way around this? Can we not have them high five? Is there anything? Can they give each other a thumbs up? Can they, you know? And in
general, they just wave in a non-specific way toward the other side of the room?
Right. I'll mention the show. It's called Earth to Ned. It was on Disney Plus. It got taken down. It was really funny. You know, find it on your local BitTorrent, I guess. But yeah, they were so on that show, so like open to ideas, and we pitched a lot of crazy stuff that they actually did. But it was just, there were just these little things that you wouldn't know unless you were a puppeteer that would just be the biggest pains in the ass in the world.
Now, I assume those were more classic kind of Kermit style arms on strings or sticks kind of hands, as opposed to the Alf style, which is like an actual hand through the
We had
puppet.
Some characters on sticks, but there was also a lot of different kinds of puppets. There was an Alf-like puppet, and then the main puppet, Ned, was a like four-armed alien that was controlled by 9 people at once and had a, you know, voice actor working the face with a glove off stage. Fucking fascinating. It was so much fun to watch that stuff up close.
I would like if you guys would not totally destroy my sense of what's real and what's not real on these shows.
Oh, sorry.
So. Sean likes to believe these.
Ned was real. Alf was real.
Thank you.
And your dad's coming home any second now, Slugger.
I have a childlike sense of wonder.
On Earth to Ned, did the cast slowly descend into madness the way that the Alf cast did?
No, you know, Earth to Ned was a very happy, fun job. And everybody was a real pro. I mean, it was a Henson production, so I think that, like, everybody just fucking knew what they were doing. The, like, competency on that show was like off the charts. I just felt like, oh great, everyone here knows what they're doing in this really like nice way. Yeah, I don't know. It was fun and efficient. I think they shot a lot of episodes in a short amount of time. I don't know.
It feels to me like Alf, which came along after the Muppets were well established,
Right. Ignored
all the lessons that they learned from the Muppets and took the wrong thing, which is people love puppets. Let's make it really interesting, as opposed to, I'm sure Jim Henson tried some of the stuff that they did on Alf and was like, this is inefficient. It doesn't work. Sure. It's not adding anything. It's not valuable to the show. Here's what's valuable. And it feels like they kind of were like reinventing the genre in a sense with Alf and doing it in a way that was cumbersome and difficult.
Well, I do have friends who worked on the most recent reboot of The Muppets, and I believe that it was, and maybe that was just in comparison to them working with, you know, live action, single cam, half hours, but it sounded like it was just like a huge nightmare to like turn the camera in the opposite direction and get coverage, and it was just like a huge procedure, and if you ever like, oh, we want to, you know, actually pick up this shot, it's just like, we're not going to do that. That's going to take hours and hours. Sure. So I think that is sort of, to a certain degree, built into the process.
I could be totally wrong, and I'm basing my judgment of the Muppets on the fact that we've never heard stories about Jim Henson driving people crazy or any of the people on that show going crazy. Like, it's always been described as such a great atmosphere and a great place to work. So maybe they all had to sign NDAs or something about what was going on there in reality.
It is a very interesting question. Maybe it's just because most of the people working on the Muppet properties are not their puppeteers. They know what they're getting in for at the beginning. Whereas, you know, Max Wright was just a long journeyman actor who was suddenly right. like, hey, you know how hard regular acting is? This is going to be seven times as hard and take seven times as long. Right. And this is your job for the next 4 years.
And the puppet will peep on your wife in the shower.
That's also true. Yeah. You're going to be constantly cuckolded.
Your
TV
wife and your real wife.
Yeah. That was a weird thing that was built into Fusco's contract.
I get to see all wives in showers. Any wife I want. If a wife is showering, I get to look. What? All right, man.
So we're trying to figure out what to do with Alf and the kid. They can't have soda, as we discussed earlier. So Alf has them come out of the kitchen with beers. They each have a beer. The mom gets very upset. But this is where we find out that Melmac was the name of his planet.
Right.
And it exploded, and he has a piece of the street he grew up on with him. So it's
just
really
to address
odd.
That the beer soda thing, doesn't that kind of work a little bit like give the show a little bit? Yes, it undermines the mom character because she's such a drip that she won't even let them drink soda. But doesn't it, for the purposes of the show, make it a little bit hipper that it's like actually this puppet giving a child beer?
Yeah. I mean, I'll give it a point for that, and that, you know, I'm sure was edgy for the time and edgy for prime time on NBC for sure. Yeah.
By the end, you'll have to give it a 10. Our ALF rating system.
And this is where we get to the big
on a scale of no to 10 problems.
This is where we get to the big problem in the episode,
right.
Which is there's a knock at the door. And guess who it is? It's fucking, what's his name? Darnell Valentine? Is that the...
I don't know the name of the actor, and I did not clock the name of the character.
I think the character's name is Darnell Valentine, which is kind of incredible.
Yeah. Some good names. I mean, Gordon Shumway's a good name. Like, there's, you know, some good,
good
naming
classic
in this.
TV names.
They've gotten a tip that they may be harboring an alien, so they want to know what's going on.
And
I do like the little side note that there is an alien task force that's already out there. They're
and
looking
he's okay
for him.
With just saying it to people. Like it's not,
it sure is.
It's not a secret. He's not trying to be covert at all. He's just like, I'm from the alien task force. I have worn my military outfit to this investigation. So there's, yeah. So I am not
on top of which he's all. On top of which he's flying solo. Like he's just by himself.
I'm alone. In a yeah. neighborhood, telling everyone that aliens exist, the government knows about it, and we're looking for one here. And yeah,
and whatever that's, happens, I can handle it by myself. It
right. And that's just one of the things about like the logic of this show, right? And it's like, is this a world where aliens exist and are normal? Because everyone's being really blasé about this. Uh-huh. And this guy who is part of some sort of alien investigation force just says who he is very casually. So you do have this sense of like, what am I watching? Like, what's the logic here?
And you don't remember from the series whether it's like, oh, yes, aliens. Like, if that's sort of the general take of the outsider, the regular civilians on the show.
Yeah, there's so much like trying to hide Alf, trying to like hide Alf from.
So they're just they're acting like regular humans would if they had an alien in their
house. I think so,
More or less. It's not like, oh, well, this is a world where aliens are more... Well, this kind of brings me to my... I never would have predicted that on a show covering ALF that I would be the one who is defending it. Because I certainly, in my time, have used it as the hacky reference point for bad television as much as anybody. But... I guess in my head, one thing I liked about this scene is that as soon as they go through the Sturm und Drang of the, you know, the, well, are they going to reveal him? Are they going to tell the military guy about him? Is the mother going to? Then the guy goes through the very heavy-handed thing of like, well, first we're going to do this, then we're going to electrify him, then we're going to dissect him. Obviously putting the family in a position of like, okay, well, we're going to protect him instead. But one thing I like is the moment that decision is made and they're like, no, we don't have an alien here. The military guy's just like, all right, all right.
Just, see ya. This happens with anonymous tips all the time. That's why they're anonymous.
But I also, to me, the headcanon was, this guy doesn't believe there's aliens. He's just, this is his department. He was like, sent out to do this. He goes and goes through the fucking rigmarole. And then it's like when the person says, no, there are no aliens, he goes, great.
Right. I got shot in Nam. They gave me a desk job. I'm
just waiting for my pension.
Waiting for, yeah.
So I kind of like that.
Yeah. And I think there's a world where like everything is very cartoony. And that's kind of the joke of it, is just that, like, everything's cartoony and not really real, but it doesn't seem to, like, commit to that in the whole thing. It just seems like sometimes this is the real world and sometimes this is a crazy world, and it doesn't really make sense when it's one and when it's the other.
Right.
They also do a thing in this scene, which is one of my, I guess I'd call it a bugaboo. It's something I really don't enjoy. Which is, she says, where did you get this tip? And he goes, I'm sorry, that information is strictly anonymous. You know, the comedic Freudian slip that gives us the information we need and yet covers up, you know, that he shouldn't have said that. It's like, that is a thing that takes me outside the show every time it happens and goes, come on, there's a better way to do that, you know?
Yeah.
I really can't dispute anything you guys are saying. On balance, this show, the jokes are non-existent to setups without punchlines, you know, too soft, with a few examples that we've pointed out along the way of like, oh, well, that's a solid joke and that's a solid joke. I think my expectations for this were so low that the fact that I'm watching a show that is functional, that the father character and the dynamic between him and even then the mother just sort of being like, she's afraid for her children and her family is like a good motivation for that character. The father just being immediately sort of, you get to him being antagonized in a really effective way immediately. And that the Alf character itself, outside of the fact that he's just filthy for no reason. Like, why is that character's fur so dirty? And I just don't understand.
Right.
Outside of that, he's a competent puppeteer and he's got a voice that's pretty nailed down and the rhythm is, it's just like, this is a successful housing to have a show go as long as it went. Whereas I just wasn't even expecting that. I was expecting it to be patently offensive in its lack of good qualities and its lack of professional sort of structure to have a show around. That being said, I totally agree that in terms of jokes, it's just like, what are you doing? But to me, like, the style is successful enough that it gets me over it.
Fair enough. Okay, then Alf is out in the garage. He's calling his friends on the radio. He wants them to respond in some way. His friends, Skip, Larry, and Buffy, I believe, were the names of the people he was reaching out to.
Pretty funny.
Yeah. And then he does the thing.
Is that a throw forward to Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Oh, interesting. Maybe.
Or to Skip Bayless, the guy on ESPN Sports Center, you know?
Right.
Or Larry from Hello Larry. It could be any of those things.
A lot of great Larrys out there.
Yeah. And then he does that thing where you give a speech about people when the people are there and you don't realize that they're there. And he says some very touching things about how much he likes this family, how nice they are. It's very sweet. Yes. And then he again undercuts it at the end by saying he's going to eat their cat.
I thought that was all right. As we're going through this, I'm like finding more things about it where I'm like, it was all right. Okay, that was all right.
Well, that's the other thing is like, I feel like you would have gotten pressure from the network to just end it sweet.
Sure.
And there is the undermining of it at the very end. That it's like Alf's still going to be Alf. And I kind of appreciate that in a kid-centric family sitcom.
Alf's going to Alf.
I think that you make a good point, Andy, which is like, as far as setting up a pilot, this does a serviceable job. The difficulty I would have watching it, and I'm watching it now with the jaded eyes of a guy who loves Steamboat Willie, but had I watched it when I was a kid, I might be in a position to go, oh, I'd like to see more of this. I don't have any interest in seeing more of this based on this pilot, you know?
And yet you're going to, Sean.
I already did.
That's what the podcast is now. Well, it's an Alf recap and show.
And that's ironic because that's what made me feel even more strongly that the pilot should have been better, because I thought the second episode was so much better in terms of just in terms of comedy, not in terms of like not even talking about story or character, because obviously the character stuff is all different, but just in terms of, oh, this is actually funny in places, you know?
Yeah. I do wonder like what it would be like. We've watched the first two episodes just to do like, I don't know, just go on the, you know, ALF playlist that is inexplicably on YouTube. They're all there for free. That's how I watched it. And just like, you know, click into season 3, episode 6 and see what it's like. Like, do the, you know, weird sci-fi things. You know, are those more prevalent? Are the characters a little more fleshed out? I did notice when I was just kind of scrolling
like,
through.
Find the episodes that have a little bit more of the world building aspect.
Yeah, I did see that there's an episode in one of the future seasons where Alf fills in for Johnny Carson.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Is that a backdoor pilot for the other thing? No, I guess the other thing would have been like,
yeah, but
later.
I mean, obviously it was like on their minds. I wonder, do you think we could guess who his guests are, who Alf's guests are when he fills in for Johnny Carson?
Oh, do you know what the answer is to this?
I don't, but maybe I can look. Actually, why don't we, yeah.
I assume that would have been somewhere in the middle of the run. So,
like 86, 87, maybe.
Sean Penn?
Gotta be Sean Penn.
Could have been Sean Penn. I mean, like, I was surprised that in the Ed McMahon later one, they already had like Joe Mantegna and Bryan Cranston. I don't know. I guess he must have been on Malcolm in the Middle at the time and Joan Rivers. So, I don't know. Mid-80s. It feels like Patrick Swayze would have been too big then.
I'm going to say, it's got to be Burt Reynolds, right?
Is that Donna Summer's time?
Lionel Richie?
Lionel Richie could be.
I mean, we could name mid-80s stars forever, you know. Yeah.
Larry Hagman.
This is not going to pay off in any kind of reasonable way because I cannot find a list. I thought this would be fun. I'm sorry, okay?
Great.
Yeah, this was fun, and I'm Lyle Wagoner.
By the way, this might be the appropriate time to say we're on Zoom, but Jordan has been in an elf costume the whole time. So.
I have, yeah. I'm committed.
And you can just see the tip of his erection.
That's the kind of joke they eventually would have gotten to on ALF. Mm-hmm. Is ALF got to be ALF?
Joyce Brothers. I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry. Dr. Joyce Brothers.
How do I not know Dr. Joyce Brothers as the obvious one? Mm-hmm. Because I did bits with her. As a mainstay on late night when I was there.
And Joan Embry comes out with a cat at some point and Alf wants to eat it. So there you go.
Joan Embry.
We solved it, guys.
Is Joan Embry the wildlife person?
Yes, yeah.
This is dumb because I was just thinking of celebrities at the time. And what I should have been thinking of is who are the quintessential Carson guests?
Right,
no,
yeah.
Rickles, huh? No Rickles?
No Rickles. Hey, Yelf, what are you, a little Puerto Rican?
Oh, we gotta cut this.
Hey, look over there. The elf in the back is eating a cat, huh?
I'm a nice guy.
All right, guys. As has been referenced many times, Jordan joins us to cover episode 2 in a commentary that should be up on the Patreon already. Want to thank you, Jordan, for joining us. You've been a delight. Is there anything you want to point our, you know, a reasonable fan base to?
Yes, I love talking to reasonable people who don't just fly off the handle when you plug your upcoming graphic novel. And that's all I ask, is that you consider pre-ordering a new graphic novel written by me with art by the great Bowen McGurdy. It is called Youth Group. It is a YA horror comedy about teenage exorcists. It is a little bit funny, a little bit spooky, a little bit romantic. We tried to give it Buffy the Vampire Slayer vibes and Shaun of the Dead vibes. Some of those good horror comedies. Yeah, it is available for pre-order now. It'll be out this summer, but ooh boy, we love those pre-orders. They really help books, and they make sure you get it. ASAP. So you can do that at Barnes & Noble. You can do that at Amazon.com. Better yet, your local indie bookstore. Give them a call. Tell them you want to pre-order Youth Group or do it on their website. Youth Group. It's coming out. It'll be a lot of fun.
That's nice. And I haven't read that one yet. I look forward to it. I have read Bubble, your previous work, which was fantastic and funny and genre satisfying. So I'm sure this one will be too. Also, do you want to plug your, is it Free With Ads? Is the new pod you're working on?
Oh, yeah, there's a new pod. I had not to overload the folks with plugs, but while we're here, we might as well talk about it. I do a couple of podcasts. One of them is Jordan Jesse Go. It is a chat show with Jesse Thorne. We have a guest on every week. We shoot the shit. And the newest one is called Free With Ads. That is me and the great comic Emily Fleming, and we just watch a weird movie from the Free With Ads section of, you know, YouTube or Tubi or Pluto or whatever. We watch stuff like Time Cop and The Birds. The Birds is on there. That's weirdly up there.
Weird.
He's just not that
I
into
heard
you.
That was, I heard that. I heard The Birds was good.
The Birds is good. The Birds is great. So we occasionally will watch a good movie for this pod.
How are the bird puppets in that?
They're weird. They're weird looking.
Yeah,
sure. I heard they used a circus performer for a lot of the birds.
Yeah,
Are the birds? Are the bird puppets clean? I know you having a clean puppet
filthy
is very
birds,
important.
Filthy birds. Someone clean these birds.
Well, Jordan, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks
it's
for having
been
me.
Wonderful. I knew you'd be a fun guest, being both a writer and a comedy personality. Did we say that?
Yes, you may.
A raconteur.
Mm-hmm.
Sean, do we have anything else to say?
I think we're good. I think we've got to roll right into our Patreon so people can do that and listen to us talk about episode 2, which we've teased quite a bit in this episode.
Yes. So, anyway. And hey, guys, being on this show was no problem. Right?
All right, then thank you, everybody. That's our show. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe. If you leave us a 5-star review on any platform, iTunes, Spotify, remember, you get your pilot's wings, your fake pilot's wings.
Obviously, the big thing for people leaving reviews is that they get their pilot's wings, but it's also very helpful to us in a variety of ways, right?
Yes, it is very helpful to us.
Just in terms of self-esteem.
Self-esteem, feeling good about ourselves, raising the profile of the show, bragging to our parents that we got another 5-star review. It's all very helpful. Also, feel free to follow up and check out our Patreon, patreon.com/copilotsTV, where, as we have mentioned, you will find episode 2 of ALF with Jordan, and all our other social media also at copilotsTV.
And I just want to say I think episode 2 is a real humdinger.
So. I agree with you. It's maybe our best episode behind the paywall.
I don't know about that, but sure, yeah.
There's only one way to find out who's right, and then you can vote in our poll. Anyway, thank you guys for joining us. Wheels down.
Hooray. I like when people applaud when the plane lands.